Meditation and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. Purport: extravagance in the matter of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating, which are demands of the body, can block advancement in the practice of yoga. As far as eating is concerned, it can be regulated only when one is practiced to take and accept prasadam, sanctified food. Lord Krishna is offered, according to the Bhagavad Gita, vegetables, flowers, fruits, grains, milk, etc. In this way, a person in Krishna consciousness becomes automatically trained not to accept food not meant for human consumption, or not in the capacity, in the category of goodness. As far as sleeping is concerned, a Krishna conscious person is always alert in the discharge of his duties in Krishna consciousness, and therefore any unnecessary time spent sleeping is considered a great loss. Avyartha kalatvam, a Krishna conscious person cannot bear to pass a minute of his life without being engaged in the service of the Lord. Therefore, his sleeping is kept to a minimum. His ideal in this respect is Srila Rupa Goswami, who was always engaged in the service of Krishna, and who could not sleep more than 2 hours a day, and sometimes not even that. Thakur Haridas would not even accept prasadam, nor even sleep for a moment without finishing his daily routine of chanting with his beads 300,000 names. As far as work is concerned, a Krishna conscious person does not do anything which is not connected with Krishna's interest, and thus his work is always regulated and is untainted by sense gratification. Since there is no question of sense gratification, there is no material leisure for a person in Krishna consciousness. And because he is regulated in all his work, speech, sleep, wakefulness, and all other bodily activities, there is no material misery for him. Yukta hara viharasya, yukta cheshtasya karamasu, yukta swapnavabodhasya, yogo bhavati dukkha. He was regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. Some very basic advice here for aspiring yogis, whether one be a karma yogi, jnana yogi, dhyana yoga, yogi, bhakti yogi, or even if one wants to live a healthy life in this world, physically and mentally healthy life in this world, it's very good advice to be regulated, as stated in the previous verse, not to eat too much, not to sleep too much, not to eat too little, not to sleep too little. These are basic points. The word yukta is used here. We know that word from the term yukta vairagya, is a commonly used term, yukta. In this context, Srila Prabhupada has translated as regulated. It has many meanings. Another meaning is suitable. So one should suitably eat also, eating, sleeping, all these things. One should eat suitable food, that which is suitable for practicing yoga. Yukta vihara. Vihara means recreation, but devotees don't engage in recreation as such. When Srila Prabhupada was asked about what do devotees do for entertainment, Srila Prabhupada said, we do kirtan. So there's no difference between work and entertainment. It's because the devotee's happy and he doesn't really work in the sense that materialistic people, they go to work. It's a drudgery. But for him, work and play are all the same. That's for someone who's advanced in Krishna consciousness. For those who are less advanced, they may find some of the services to be drudgerous. You know what that means? That means to be not very pleasing, boring. Sometimes we differentiate that the pujari is doing very high-level service and the person cleaning the floor in the temple is doing very low-level service. But as Srila Prabhupada often explained, they're both on the same level, depending on the consciousness of the performer. Shastra states, the one who cleans the temple of the Lord, they go back to Godhead. We have the example of Ambarish Maharaj. He, among many other services, he would clean the temple. So, still at the same time, there is a certain qualification is required to worship the deity of the Lord, which that much qualification is not required to clean the temple of the Lord. Qualification in terms of being suitably initiated, and one who is thus initiated is supposed to be at a certain level of knowledge and cleanliness and general behavior, and to maintain that after initiation also. One aspect, I'm bringing this up because I was asked this, as I've been asked many times, and I've discussed this several times also. What about exercise for devotees? Because we see that in the last generation, in India especially, it's become quite apparent, probably because India modernized very quickly, so it's become very apparent that the general bodily strength and health of the present young generation is considerably less than that of the previous generation. In the Western countries, with it's been a more slow decline, not that people are in, but they started sooner. But in India, India quickly is very quickly gone from a largely rural culture to, I believe, almost 50% of the population of India is now urbanized, with all the detriments to health of living in urban situations, and especially in India, the cities tend to be considerably more polluted than in other countries, and there are many other factors also, such as the use of insecticides and pesticides in foods, which started recently in India and is being used to extremes far beyond the legal limits in any country. So that basically people living in the cities, especially, they lead sedentary lives. They breathe poisonous air and they eat poisonous food. Oh, and there's poisonous water to drink also, just for good measure, either from the tap or from a bottle. You can purchase, you don't only get it through the tap, you can also purchase poisonous water in a bottle. And it's supposed to be not poisonous, but it is. Maybe not as poisonous as the water in the tap. Then we also have the phenomenon of genetically modified foods, which also adds to the difficulty, and all kinds of things like not practicing to sit on the floor. People they have tables and chairs to eat their meals from, so people find difficulty, but you have to practice sitting with your legs crossed. And there are many factors in which we see that people are very unhealthy, and there are all kinds of consequences, all kinds of diseases. In many cases, married couples, they cannot beget children, and even if they do, the child is often delivered by cesarean operation. Whether it's needed or not is another question. It usually, or maybe in many cases, that the doctors just want to get a little more money, and so they tell you that you need a cesarean operation. Artificial birth control is also another factor in the ill health, especially of women, and so on and so on and so on. And what this practically means for our Krishna conscious movement, for people coming to Krishna consciousness, we often find that they're very physically unhealthy. And therefore, even to practice the basic activities in ashram life becomes difficult for them. Because ashram life, ashram, it's not ashram, it's ashram. Shrama means work. Ashram means not work. Oh, that's good. But ashram means ashram, means definitely not no work. It's an intensifier, not a negativifier. So it's a busy life, as I wrote in that Brahmacharya and Krishna Consciousness. We can advertise to all the young men that we'll give you, you don't have a job, we'll give you a job. Long hours, hard work, and no pay. The pay is Krishna Prem. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked for that. Vetan More Dia Krishna Prema Dhan. In the Bengali version of Nadhanam Najanam, the Krishnas Kaviraj gives that. Give me the wages of love of God. But it is intense. Early rising, often with late nights, and then we're supposed to keep busy all the day. In the early days of our Krishna conscious movement, sleeping in the day was very much discouraged. Nowadays we're a bit more pragmatic. Still we see devotees tend to get very sleepy, especially around this time of day in the class. There was once a discussion among devotees on the email discussion about how much should devotees sleep, if they need more, should they sleep more. I offered that our devotees, they all get a good 9 hours of sleep every day. They have 6 hours at night, 2 hours in the japa period, and 1 hour in the Bhagavatam class. So this way they get at least 9 hours of sleep. Not meant to be like that. But we find that many devotees, they're quite sick. They're not really fit to live in an ashram, even if they want to, because they're just too sick, too sickly. Or they may come fairly healthy, but after some time they get in poor health. And we've seen that with many of our older devotees. About 2 years ago, something like that, I was in Mumbai at the same time as the GBC meeting was going on, so many of my godbrothers were there, most of them a little older than me. Before going there, I thought I was in pretty bad health. After going there and seeing all of them, I thought I wasn't doing too bad, because most of them were in much worse shape than I was. And one major reason for that, apart from all the non-Vedic recreational activities that most of us engaged in before taking to Krishna consciousness, there's also a lifetime of minimizing sleep, lot of travel, with the irregulation that goes with that, and a lot of stress that comes with being a GBC member, with so many problems to deal with and so many people to deal with. And most of them were pretty sick in one way or another. To find a healthy GBC, it's something like Manushanam Sahasreshu, something like that. So seeing this, should we be more concerned about our physical health? Because, what is that? Nridehamadyam No, there's a saying from Kalidas, which I... Manusha Deham... I can't remember. It means that the human body is meant for practicing dharma and sadhana. It has to be physically fit enough so that it can be done. Otherwise, if one is not physically fit, unless one is a paramahamsa, then it becomes very difficult to engage in the basic activities of Krishna consciousness. So one may think that I'm being very spiritually advanced by being detached from the body and not looking after it properly, but then later when one gets sick, one is plunged into bodily consciousness, being aware of the pains and the weakness, and one has to make more effort to look after the body if one doesn't look after it in advance. So it seems to make a lot of sense to look after the body properly so that one can serve Krishna. But then one has to do so in a manner that doesn't compromise one's Krishna consciousness. In the Madhva Sampradaya, following the example of Madhvacharya himself, who was, apart from being very strong spiritually and mentally, he was also very strong physically. He has, of course, Bhima, and before that Hanuman, so he's very strong, and there are instances where one great wrestler wanted to fight with him. He challenged him and he said, "Well, first let's see if you can lift my toe off the ground," which he wasn't able to do. The wrestler wasn't able to do that. So we'll find in his sampradaya that the boys in the Gurukul, they have plenty of exercise. Nowadays that's cricket. That Vidyapeeth in Purnapragya Vidyapeetha in Bangalore. At least when I went there, there were several games of cricket going on. And when I came out 2 hours later, they were still going on from the young boys while we were inside discussing various philosophical points. In not all of the Ramanuja Sampradaya, but in at least in some parts, they practice yoga, the physical exercise of yoga. This BKS Iyengar, he's a famous teacher. I think he died recently, just a few days ago. So that's also worth bearing in mind, that however much you can stretch your body in various ways, eventually it will be stretched out. You'll be taken away in a stretcher and the whole thing will be burned or maybe buried. But it is there within the Vaishnava tradition. In our Gaudiya tradition, no, I don't see there's any such thing. Although our Gaudiya tradition has, until recently, beginning with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it has been largely non-institutional, whereas the Madhva Sampradaya, beginning with the Shankara Sampradaya, Shankara, he introduced the system of having mutts, or what in English would be called monasteries, which was already extant in India at the time with Buddhists. Otherwise, Gurukuls tended to be rather informal. Buddhists, they formalized education and monastic life, and Shankara, he introduced that in this Kali Yuga in the Vedic tradition, and Ramanuja Madhva followed that. In our Gaudiya tradition, it hasn't been there, but now it is there, especially beginning with, with mutts, that was beginning with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There was some beginning of institutionalization with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur went for it in a much more organized way, specifically having mutts or ashrams, monasteries, and Srila Prabhupada even much more so. What do we do? Do we do exercise? Do we do yoga? Well, actually, Srila Prabhupada, he didn't encourage that. He often said that this bodily exercise, yoga, is just it's for persons in the bodily concept of life, nothing to do with anything spiritual. It's not actually spiritual in and of itself. On two occasions that I know of, Srila Prabhupada on a morning walk with his disciples saw one or more people doing Hatha Yoga, and the devotees made some sarcastic comments, and Srila Prabhupada said, "No, actually this is very good, even for spiritual life," he said. And then the devotees asked, "Well, should we do it then also?" And Srila Prabhupada, he said, "Not necessary." He didn't encourage that. But on the other hand, himself, his morning walk routine was started on doctor's advice after he had a stroke in New York, I believe it was. Or he had in New York, and he had it maybe on the West Coast also. Anyway, a doctor advised him to take a morning walk daily. And Srila Prabhupada did. And that became a venue for many of Srila Prabhupada's interesting conversations, which are recorded. So Srila Prabhupada dovetailed that in Krishna's service. But there is also the very fact that Srila Prabhupada, he didn't encourage this. When he was asked about exercise, he said, "Well, you dance in kirtan." But then our devotees, well, we maybe don't dance in kirtan as much as we did in the early days of the movement, where the standard for devotees living in ashrams, which meant pretty much all of the devotees in the movement at that time, was that they'd go out for hours every day on Harinam Sankirtan. So they had plenty of exercise in that way. And people who are physically active, generally they don't do any extra exercise, just like people, farmers, who they're all day busy in various ways, they generally don't do any extra physical exercise. They get it one way or the other by their physical activity working. But for most people in the modern age, including most devotees, they lead sedentary lives, sitting down all day, and this gradually causes many physical problems, especially as one gets older. So, should we follow what Srila Prabhupada didn't encourage devotees to do, this kind of exercise, or should we say that, well, it's pragmatic, we want to serve Krishna in the best way we can, and if we don't, if we don't exercise in this way, then as we see, we're much more likely to, the body is after all a machine, and just like a car, if you don't service it regularly and put in fuel and antifreeze in the Western countries, maybe, I don't know if they still use that, then you can expect various problems with your car. It needs to be properly maintained. So this could be a point of contention, because Srila Prabhupada said one thing, but then we may think that, well, maybe it's better to do something else. After all, people are much more, it's observable among our devotees worldwide that the present generation is much less physically fit than previous generations. Not that people in previous generations were all fit and healthy, because the very nature of this material body is sharira vyadhi mandiram. It's a place of disease. Oh, and another point is that devotees, that was the Siddha Swarupa Ananda group who are into healthy food, and they said that they didn't want to take white sugar. And Srila Prabhupada rejected that and ate large portions of it right in front of them. But it is quite clear from all the research that's been done on it that white sugar and white flour and processed foods and hydrogenated oil and the general food that we use is actually a major cause of serious diseases, like directly or indirectly, diseases like diabetes, heart problems, and so on. And we don't want devotees to suffer from that. Actually, white sugar in India, as I remember it, used to be not so white. It wasn't so thoroughly processed. You couldn't get this white sugar. What was called the white sugar previously wasn't so very processed, and it had somewhat flavor of gur, you may remember. But nowadays it's fully processed, and white rice also, it's also all these things. So what should we do? Should we pragmatically adjust our diet and our lifestyle to be more healthy so we can keep the body healthy for serving Krishna? Or should we follow Srila Prabhupada's example and eat lots of white sugar, and we can take white flour? Although, even I've seen that although white flour, or maida as it's called in Hindi, is it's a common food in North India, but it's usually for some fancy item. The daily food is chapati, made with whole wheat flour atta. It's supposed to be made with whole wheat flour atta. Although I don't know how traditional that is, how far it goes back. But in some parts in Punjab, and there are people who eat these naan roti, which is made with white flour. And in Bangladesh, I don't know how traditional that is, but it was quite common to see on the street the Muslims cooking paratha from white flour, although generally should be made with whole wheat. So anyway, apart from the which way we resolve the question, or which way we decide to do, which way we decide to go, should we eat all unhealthy food and live in an unhealthy lifestyle and then largely increase our chances of being able to well serve Krishna's mission in the future, and in fact what might seem to be a burden in terms of having, then we'll require devotees to look after us and have to spend so much money on medical fees, or just no longer allowed in the ashram and just nowhere to go and just become a vagabond, homeless vagabond, something like this. So, which way should we go? I think that most devotees would answer that, well, we should be more careful and live a more healthy lifestyle. I think most devotees would answer that, like that. But then some would say, well, no, Prabhupada didn't encourage all these things. Oh, there is one instance of Nanda Kumar, who was Srila Prabhupada's servant for some time, personal servant, traveling servant. He related that he was eating raw food only. And he asked Prabhupada if it was all right, because he said it was better for health. And Prabhupada said that, yes, actually that is the best diet for health. That's a yogi's diet. And you should, he said to him specifically, that you should take whatever is, you should do whatever is required to keep your body healthy for Krishna's service. He related like that. So where do we take this? Because if we say that, well, Srila Prabhupada said one thing, but his overall mission was to spread love of God, and therefore, considering this, that we're supposed to serve his mission, we may not accept his... He didn't exactly prohibit it, but it was clear that he didn't encourage devotees to do exercise beyond dancing in kirtan. He wasn't a great fan of it. Although apparently he told some devotees they could, that brahmacharis could do wrestling and swimming. And also in Vishakhapatnam, he sent devotees daily for swimming at the beach. They were just in the sea. They were in Puri Maharaj's ashram, which is on the beach there. Now, how this white sugar, white flour thing, how do you understand this? Some devotees will say, yes, we should follow exactly what Prabhupada said. And others would say, well, now that's not Prabhupada's main instruction. The main instruction is to serve Krishna. And we require a healthy body to do that. So, this is the kind of thing that can, even small details that can split a sampradaya. We have to understand, we have to accept the orders of the guru, but certain of the things he said, they may be debatable, and their application. And then, what do we do? Well, we have to then, in the next generation, or maybe several generations down the line, there may be differences of opinion between different devotees who are initiating others, who are gurus, and there are differences of opinion on such matters. And that's the way differences come. You may think, well, it's not such a very big thing about exercise, but how far do you take it? One of the gurus in our movement for exercise, he used to play soccer and basketball, I think it was, with the brahmacharis or whoever he could get together. And in one sense, you could understand that, because exercise is kind of boring. You can listen to lectures of Prabhupada while you're doing that. Whereas sports are not boring. They're quite interesting. You get more enthusiastic about it. But then he was spending, I heard, like 2 hours every day, and organizing football games. He'd be the father's age to those who was pretty fit at 50 plus to play soccer, a full game. 2 hours means he must have been playing a full game of soccer. And basketball is even more physically demanding than soccer, as far as I remember. It's a lot of action, whereas in soccer, sometimes you get a little rest. Basketball is non-stop. Then you get other things like badminton, which is really, really heavy after a set of badminton, even as a teenager. I would be... Then the GBC body quietly advised him, well, you'd better stop doing this because it doesn't look so good, doesn't set such a good example. How far do you take it? He became much more physically healthy, which is good, but it seemed that he went too far this way, so it became a point of concern. So yuktahara viharasya, yukta vihara, one should perform exercise as much as is needed for the body, but even Bhikkhaya Sayanga had to die. We should remember that. Shariram adyam dharma kama sadhanam, that's the Kalidas quote. But yeah, this is the kind of thing that can be highly contentious in a matter of whether or how much one should exercise. It may not be such a major point, but some may take it to be a major point and say, well, Prabhupada said that. Srila Prabhupada didn't encourage yoga. He said, not necessary. So why should you do yoga? Some want to take very literally at every level, and others are more flexible, you could say. How, if we take the orders of the Guru as our life and soul, and Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Koriya Aikya Arna Koriho Mane Asha, how much do we take that in practical matters or even philosophical matters? It's in the year 2000, the women's bill or something like that was the women's ministry was formed, and at that time, one of our GBC members said, "Well, don't quote what Prabhupada said, but you have to think what he would say now, considering that times have changed," which scandalized a few members of the movement, unfortunately, not nearly enough, who thought that, well, what Prabhupada said is relevant then, and it's relevant now. That because feminism has swept the Western world and is very actively trying to sweep up, gobble up, whichever parts of the world it hasn't yet gobbled up. Therefore, we have to make some major concessions to feminism. Of course, it wasn't said in those terms because no one, actually with the exception of one, no one in ISKCON would call himself a feminist, because it's known that Srila Prabhupada didn't like feminism, so you can't say I'm a feminist. You can be, you can have all the symptoms of a feminist and say that, well, actually, I'm not a feminist. So this point, I don't want to get too much into the feminism discussion right now, but the point that, well, don't see what Prabhupada said, see what he would say now. I would say that is applicable in this case in the matter of exercise. Of course, it's very difficult to know. We can only speculate what Srila Prabhupada would say in any particular situation. Various situations have arisen for which we don't have any clear precedent of how Srila Prabhupada dealt with such situations. So, therefore, the followers of Srila Prabhupada have to taking the instructions of Srila Prabhupada that are available to us, we have to make some decision on any certain, on various certain issues. But again, this is the kind of thing that causes divisiveness, because some would say, no, this is not right. This is, Srila Prabhupada said this, we should do, so we have to do like this in all circumstances. And others would say that, no, we have to see the overall mission. There's another case I can think of where a devotee argues that we should be very tolerant and open to homosexuality, even though Srila Prabhupada spoke badly of it. He said, this disciple of Srila Prabhupada said that, he said, "I am confident that if Srila Prabhupada was present now, I could convince Srila Prabhupada to change his position, which seems to be highly presumptuous, that actually Srila Prabhupada didn't know so much about all this, because at the time it was thought that homosexuality is sinful, it's something that is... That Srila Prabhupada said homosexuality is not found among the animals, and apparently according to scientific studies they have found it. I guess that would be more for animals that are confined in zoos and this and that than in the natural habitat. But the idea that, well, Srila Prabhupada, his position on such and such a matter was very clear, and that, well, actually, I don't really agree with that, and I think I could convince Prabhupada otherwise. It's going a bit far. It's crossing the limits of the position of a disciple, it would seem like that. Actually, of course, although Srila Prabhupada, he did speak condemningly of homosexuality, but at the same time he was very accommodating to devotees who were homosexuals, and he engaged them in his movement and even gave them very high positions, knowing their proclivity, which he said, and Shastra supports, is illicit or depraved. So what do we do? Do we all have a yoga? That was the question to me. Should we have regular yoga sessions for our devotees to help to keep them fit? That was already started in the Brahmachari ashram in Moscow. Seeing that almost all the devotees would get sick quite regularly, that was started in Moscow. Compulsory yoga for all the brahmacharis. So maybe it's a good idea. We don't want to get, like I said, we don't want to get too much into it, but then we don't want to spend half our life in the hospital either, which we see here in India, our devotees also. They may not be very old. They may join in their 20s and they're already quite sick. So I support the position. Yeah, better that devotees do some physical exercise. Not only brahmacharis, but grihasthas who are living at home also, they should also do. Squeeze it. Already your life is very busy and active, but it's like eating. We eat food to keep the body healthy. We sleep to keep the body healthy. But there, another factor required is that the body requires a certain amount of movement, without which, even if we eat and sleep, well, even the eating and sleeping will be disturbed. The digestion won't be proper, the sleeping won't be proper. So that's my conclusion on this, that devotees who lead sedentary lives, or even those who are going out for book distribution, although it's physically active, it doesn't move the body in various ways, and especially if you have a book bag on one side of the body, then it actually, in course of time, devotees get severe skeletal problems due to having the weight on one side of the body. It's quite common among devotees in the West. So yeah, some exercise is required. Our army man is here. So, what's it like in the army? Obviously, in the army you need fit, healthy people. But is it noted there that do the older officers note that the present generation is not as fit as the previous one? It's quite pronounced. I wonder if that may be the solution to the India-Pakistan conflict, that everyone will be so physically wiped out, no one's fit to join the army. You may say, well, how can America be so strong militarily? It's not because their soldiers are fit, but because they have advanced technology by which they can just sit in anywhere. They can sit in Las Vegas and see Iraq on their computer screen and let the missiles fly. Or now they have drones. They don't even have to go there. So that's pretty strange way to fight. You don't even have to be physically fit. You can just sit with a big fat belly and be belching and farting and kill a whole bunch of people. So what are they doing? Are they lowering the standards of admission or what? To the army? So far not. Every year you have to pass this, all the members have to pass. What about they're in the, because for every fighting soldier there must be a whole many, many others in administration, cooking, engineering. Do they all have to get the physical, they all have to get the physical clearance? Like in the engineers corps you'd think it wouldn't be so necessary, of course. Standards are the same for everyone. I see. So they go through different tenures. That means on the border tenure, either in the northwest or the northeast, and then they get another tenure when it's not so physically or mentally stressful, and they have more training and this and that. They'll be in the barracks in Secunderabad, for instance. Secunderabad, Pune, where else do they have major barracks? Many. Punjab must be, because that's the major hot spot. Punjab, Kashmir. Kanpur, is there?
Yes.
Kanpur, there's a major barracks, yeah. Okay, any question about this? You have to give the quote exactly. I can't say without seeing that. But again, actually, I want to discuss this in more detail. I'm preparing a lecture on that. But it's not that everything in Shastra is meant for everyone in all circumstances. Yoga and exercise are not synonymous. Yeah, when I was talking about yoga in this class, I was mostly talking about the way the word is used in the world today. Although the way Krishna uses the word yoga in Bhagavad Gita has quite a different meaning to the word yoga is meant in modern English, which means exercises. And in modern Hindi also, and every other language, it seems. The yoga, Patanjali yoga, has nothing to do with all these exercises, actually. Even though, with all due respect to Baba Ramdev. Yeah, so? That's it. Nayam Atma Balahinena Labdha. Yeah, Vivekananda, without strength one cannot realize the Atma. And Prabhupada criticized Vivekananda for saying that. Vivekananda's interpretation of this is play football and eat meat. Develop your biceps. Although I don't know how your biceps develop by playing football. Maybe your quadriceps is more likely.
In the second canto, actually, I read some two quotes. Prabhupada refers. In one quote, Prabhupada was mentioning this was very common in previous days, even ordinary man.
Okay. Quotes from Prabhupada. In previous ages, this kind of exercise yoga was known to everyone. And it's getting like that in many communities, or many people in America. It's just like a normal thing. So many people are doing it. And among New Age kind of people, yoga or less popular, there are other things like Chinese systems, this Tai Chi and all this kind of thing. Less popular, but still. All the New Age kind of people in America, many of them, they all do some kind of exercise. And mostly not Western types, they're mostly Eastern systems. And he wrote that for Brahmanas and Kshatriyas it is a must. Yeah. But then practically he didn't much encourage it among his disciples. So that's again, we see what he says about Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. It seems in many cases it's Srila Prabhupada, he's talking about the traditional Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, which he did want to re-establish also. But step by step, that's another big discussion which I want to get into in a series of lectures, that things that Srila Prabhupada he wanted gradually established, he often didn't encourage his earlier disciples to do it, just like learning to chant Vedic mantras, for instance. Hare Krishna. In Mayapur Gurukul, Kung Fu is being taught. How much applicable? How much what? How much can you do Kung Fu? Well, what I'm told is the boys are very enthusiastic for that. Which probably if it had been introduced into school that I went to, and probably all the schools in England at the time, and probably now, the boys would probably be quite enthusiastic for it, more than they would for their regular studies. Which suggests that they may be not so very Brahminical. They may be more like a Kshatriya, or maybe more like a Shudra, because Shudra is also very much interested in bodily, physical health. This fighting kind of exercise, I would think that boys who are actually Brahminically inclined, they wouldn't be so much inclined to that. But that they are inclined to that, then maybe they should be trained according to their inclination. We also need devotees who can protect from attackers. It's also an important consideration. From what I heard, that was introduced for the very reason that I was talking about, that the boys there, they weren't getting enough physical activity, which there was required for their body, especially at that age. The body's very, it's got a lot of energy. Again, the danger is that it may just eclipse what we're supposed to be doing. So that's why I'm always afraid of introducing the mundane curriculum into our Gurukul, because then it's a case of give them an inch and they'll take a mile, and then we'll find there was a Gurukul here and there was some proposal that we'll just so that parents agree to send their children, we'll give them a crash course in all the kami topics so that they can do the government board exams. And I said no, because otherwise our Gurukul, it won't be a Gurukul. Then there'll be more concentration on the government curriculum.
So I'd rather keep it up. Just like yesterday we were discussing about demigod worship. If we allow it in, then it'll take over. Better just keep it out altogether. So that's a consideration also. If we have kung fu and then tai chi, and then it'll be the... It may become more prominent than what it's supposed to be, something in to assist the... it's a subsidiary activity. But then it may be, because it's more popular and pleasing immediately to the senses than understanding the philosophy of the Absolute Truth, then it may become more prominent. That's the danger. Hare Krishna. Well, one thing, in what we call the Prem Dhvani or Jai Dhvani, at the end we say, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. There's traditionally that all the devotees would join in saying that at the end. And now in most ISKCON centers, no one says anything. And here, maybe the only place, the devotees here say Jaya there to that, but so there's nothing really wrong with any of these things, but at least within the Krishna consciousness, within Prabhupada's movement, as it used to be, the standard thing was that everyone altogether would say that. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Prabhupada would say that, and then standard would be that another devotee would say, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Everyone would say it together like that. Just for your information. Hare Krishna.